Conference is being recorded.
Okay, thanks. But also how the instructors also were making some the same errors. Where's my copy of the paper? Just to give as an example, there was a questionnaire that everybody was given, and they had to they were given 6 questions. It was all the same for everybody, and they had to determine whether the statement was true or false. And as it turns out, in each case, the answer is false. And you know, one of them was, a p-value means that you have found the probability being true. Well, we all know that's false. But they had a number of these popular misinterpretations, and the fact that so many of the instructors, 80% of the instructors, were getting answers on the were answering the questions incorrectly, or at least making it one mistake or more, I found sort of stunning. That's, well, boy, no wonder the students can't get it if the instructors don't understand themselves. So I found that fascinating. The other part that I thought was fascinating was they suggested that to help deal with the idea of showing the importance, or at least how to interpret a significance test correctly, they suggested the idea of contrasting a hypothesis test with Bayes' theorem and how really they're doing the opposite thing. I found that fascinating because, first, I don't cover Bayes' theorem in my course. I barely cover any probability now at this point because the students are so weak at it. So I thought it was a very interesting suggestion on their part, but they then did not go on to demonstrate that this method would necessarily be effective. They just said, we think this would be best, but sort of stated it and then moved on. So that's the one that I wanted to at least make mention of.
All right. Who wants to go next?
I can go. This is Stacy. I think the main one that I thought I got the most out of was that chapter 13 from Joan and Benzie's book on the reasoning about sampling distributions. And they had kind of a lot of background on the research in sampling distributions, which was nice, but then also kind of dove into this case study that Joan and Beth Chance and Bob Delmas have been doing. And one of the things I thought that jumped out the most is that there's a whole bunch of development on these software programs that would help do simulations for sampling distributions, but hardly any research showing that it works. And then they actually quoted some research that said that it might not work at all, which was interesting. And then there was one paper, actually Hodgson in 1996, that said that it may actually contribute to the formation of the misconceptions. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I don't think we want to go in that direction of the simulations and stuff, but it did have some good backgrounds on what has been done with sampling distribution research. And then they also had some good ideas of what students should be learning about sampling distributions, and also talking about ideas of what they need to know before they learn about sampling distributions. So those two things could be pretty useful to us if we were going to go in the sampling distributions direction. The other two I read, the Lipson paper was interesting. She did an experiment trying to link knowledge of sampling distributions to understanding statistical inference, but it seemed kind of common sense ideas, like, yes, they are kind of linked, and she showed that it worked out. And then the Garfield article I read was kind of another review on statistical reasoning. A lot of it had the same information as in the chapter 13 of that book. So those were the three that I was looking at.
Okay, yeah. So the three main things I read were sorry, hold on, I gotta grab my notes so I can remember what I read. So I read the CERD article that I thought would be potentially useful to us, at least based on our last phone conversation, since we were spending a lot of time discussing the informal versus the formal inferential reasoning. And so that was the Zeffler, Garfield, Delmas Redding article that discusses a framework for doing a framework for research on informal inferential reasoning. And basically, I think that in this chapter, as well as the book chapter that I read from the Benzi and Garfield book on developing student statistical reasoning, that provides us at least a place to start where the literature is defining informal inferential reasoning and highlighting it as different than formal, formal statistical inference. And one of the things that it seemed to me in that is that the informal inferential reasoning seemed to have this qualitative evaluation that students were making based on doing simulations or experiments, looking at different distributions of data and comparing and contrasting them. And then it seems to me that, like, students are, you know, maybe making some initial qualitative, and it could be very subjective. It could be based on a lot of, like, personal ideas. And then sort of how do you get them involved in looking at the data and reasoning and coordinating different attributes of the distribution and paying attention to maybe variability within or between distributions. And then at some point that qualitative judgment becomes more quantitative, if that makes sense, so that you're slowly sort of defining and justifying and, setting some kind of standard for how your decision is being made. So it seemed to me that was something that I was kind of drawing out of those readings that I think could be of interest to us, especially if we're trying to get at moving from the informal to the formal. But I also see the informal from the readings I was doing as being a lot more based on having some conceptual understanding of what's going on behind things before you get into the procedure, so that they would really understand the concepts before they started actually doing, like, a t-test or whatnot. So I still have a lot of questions in there about, you know, what then does that formal look like for us? And are we really trying to see if students have a strong informal understanding, would that support then their knowledge of those procedures in a different way than maybe just sort of a recipe for how to do statistical tests. So that was something that I got from those articles, and I think that first one would be really useful as a group if that's a direction we want to continue to head in, just so that we all have some sense of how the research community is defining those terms and then, you know, how we might want to expand or refine or whatever with those terms. Let's see. I think from the readings that I was doing, just some interesting ideas that popped out at me, especially because it doesn't seem like anyone's tested in both that book on the developing student statistical reasoning and then in that CERD article, that no one was really discussing that anyone has tested results of the impact of spending time with students exploring informal inferential reasoning and how that might impact, you know, student success in the course, in a stats course, or students' understandings of formal statistical procedures. And so it seemed to me that could be a direction that we might want to head in terms of maybe designing some kind of teaching experiment and having a control class and actually being able to provide some empirical data on as to whether or not there's promise for, you know, some alternative methods for teaching statistics. And I was also just thinking about our group in particular, how we have a variety of settings and types of students, and that could be something interesting if we were all working on some research with our classes. I mean, we have community college, we have private liberal arts college, we have urban settings. So I think that that could be really promising for looking at a variety of settings and how a teaching experiment might work with that. So that's kind of my summary anyway.
And so I think I read the Pat Thompson's answer from my articles, and it seemed to me that the focus in all three of them, they use this phrase, the stochastic conception of unusualness. And I think what they were trying to do in all of these articles was essentially develop informal ideas about repeated sampling and sampling distributions. And in two of the articles, they described a hypothetical trajectory of either development or learning, in which students, they first focus on individual samples, and then they focus on the collection of the values of the sample statistics, and then they start comparing those different collections. And it seemed like the main obstacle was to use ideas from probability to quantify the degree of unusualness among the various samples. And it seemed to me like what they were doing was, I think, looking at informal reasoning and seeing how a component of it related to sampling distributions developed in. These were high school students and I think high school teachers in the studies. So it seemed like these, at least one of the articles, would be interesting to read if we were to go in that direction, just to give us a model of how to break some of these conceptions apart into their more basic components. And also, a couple of the research suggestions were, it looked like things we might do would be to describe how students' ideas developed or how students' ideas might develop as far as these conceptions go. And I think that's basically what the authors were doing in these articles. So yeah, depending on where we wanted to go, they might be useful, but they were certainly interesting. All right, so done summaries. So as far as research directions, I put together a list based because Jen and Stacy had written some suggestions in their summaries, and I had written some suggestions about a month ago. And I'm assuming that what we should probably be doing is trying to figure out where to go research-wise. So I figured maybe we should talk about where we want to go research-wise.
Yeah, if you can figure out that, then that helps deciding what other papers you need to read for your literature a little bit easier.
So do people have thoughts about, content-wise, where we might want to focus our energies?
This is Stacy. I feel like most of our discussions have focused around the informal inferential reasoning and then also sampling distributions.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe those might be the two main ones that, at least from my view, it seems like we've been looking at, and specifically how to use the informal inferential reasoning in the development of concepts and things like that towards understanding sampling distributions, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do other people have similar thoughts or different thoughts?
Sorry, I don't have a particularly strong opinion on this one, so I'm in a sense trying to figure out exactly what is it that I'm interested in so much that I want to make that the focus. So certainly if others have a desire or, you know, or they want to make a particular area there the push for us, I'm certainly open to that.
I would say that I'm in agreement with Stacy. Like, it seems like our group has been spending a lot of time in the first in our first session discussing the informal versus the formal procedures and sampling distributions. And that's still pretty broad at this point because I think we need to kind of think within that, you know, what that means to us, what sort of study we want. I mean, are we looking at sampling distributions as a way of building informal inferential reasoning? And then I think, you know, I read that chapter that you, or the article that you read on sampling distributions a long time ago, Stacy, and one of the things I recall from that is all of the building blocks that it requires, that the author suggested is necessary for understanding sampling distributions. So if we're working with an undergraduate population and we're trying to test out some of these ideas, we have to think about, well, if they need to understand notions of distribution or variability before they can actually understand the sampling distribution, and then that's a building block for understanding this informal inferential reasoning. I think there's a lot of intricacies there that we need to try and really dig into to see how that's going to play out in an actual study.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for those that haven't read that article, the four things that they name as prerequisite knowledge to learning about sampling distributions, first of all, was variability, and then distribution, normal distribution, and sampling were the four things that they're looking at as building blocks. So we could also try to go into maybe one of those topics first to narrow it down.
And just to clarify, so the articles about sampling distributions, were those more formal conceptions of sampling distributions, or like in the Thompson articles that I read, it was essentially an informal conception of sampling distributions? You know, they didn't talk about anything like the central limit theorem, but they talked about if you actually drew collections of samples, what would it look like?
Oh, because they were also working with much younger students in that study. And this, I think these were college students, so I don't know, Stacy, you read that one more recently than I have, but I think that they had actually seen the central limit theorem in their coursework. So.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's why the normal distribution is one of those prerequisite knowledge for their students.
And so is a formal understanding of sampling distribution important for developing informal inferential reasoning?
That's a good question. I like that question.
Can you repeat that one more time, Aaron?
Yeah. So I was wondering if a formal understanding of sampling distributions is necessary to develop informal inferential reasoning.
And then how would you describe the formal understanding with the notions of central limit theorem and normal distribution?
Yeah, and I guess I don't have a good definition of what it would look like to have an informal or formal conception of sampling distribution, other than certainly the terminology that you would use when you're talking about sampling distributions would look different in a formal setting than, you know, in an informal setting you would use the phrase, it's a normal distribution. Whereas in an informal setting you would say, what ways can we represent this, what things stand out to you? And it seems to me like if you make that distinction in the way you talk about sampling distributions, that might that might be what I mean by informal versus formal conception of sampling distribution. And then
okay.
The question is, do you need to be able to talk about what a normal distribution looks like? Do you need to be able to talk about, you know, use particular language when you're talking about distribution of samples before you can make informal inferences?
That sounds interesting because I always think of it as the other way around. Like the informal inference could lead to formal inference.
So it sounds like you're seeing that the parts where Aaron's talking about like normal distribution or elements of that is already having some sort of formal inference skill. Stacy?
Or maybe I'm just getting confused between formal inference and then formal understanding of sampling distribution.
Yeah, I think there's some distinct ideas going on there. When I think of inference, I'm thinking about understanding of unusualness. Is this sample result unusual, sufficiently unusual, when I assume the null hypothesis is true? Where a sampling distribution is just trying to get at this idea that the statistic has its own distribution in repeated sampling that's different than the distribution of the data itself. Sort of like the idea of a function is a function and the derivative is also a function.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of find that intriguing. I find that Aaron is almost asking, do they really need a concrete structural understanding of sampling distributions, this formal understanding of sampling distributions, before they can even get at the idea of an informal idea of what it means for a sample mean to be unusual, assuming the null is true or something like that, to get at the informal reasoning? Because I agree with Stacy, I always think of informal than formal, but I think we're thinking sampling distribution before inference, and so how formal does that building block stage have to be before you can get to the informal of the next stage? I think that's really intriguing. I think that's kind of fascinating. I hadn't thought of it in those terms before.
And I was also, I'm just thinking about Jen's point, and correct me if I'm misrepresenting what you said, and I think I agree that it's important that we should make sure that whatever question we're asking, there's not too much underlying stuff, right? Because if
yeah.
we just say, like, what's formal, like, do students develop formal hypothesis testing, like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. But if we say, do students develop informal conceptions of hypothesis testing, is there also a lot of stuff that goes into that? Or is that its sort of own thing that could be developed without understanding a bunch of formal things? So I guess my question was really, maybe it wasn't a very well-formed question, but just, you know, how do we identify when something we want to look at has too many important constituent pieces that other people have already identified as problematic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's one of the, I think that's sort of the idea that I had in my head when I was talking about that. It's like, that's exactly what I was thinking about in terms of how far back do we take that? I think your question has, I think that that's a potentially really interesting topic for us to investigate. That leads me to think about kind of the way in which we would do that. I mean, there's almost like a solo, I mean, just by the way that John rephrased the question, I think like, thinking about that solo structure in terms of that hierarchy. So do you need that like top level of understanding, like that relational level of understanding or something of sampling distributions at a more formal level before you could actually go on to be at the base level for informal inferential reasoning. That's kind of the way I took John's last comment. And or if you had an informal understanding of some sampling distributions, could you start to reason, have some informal inferential reasoning skills? Yeah.
So, I'm not sure if we're going in circles here, but...
Well, that's part of this process.
That's, yeah.
This is, I know, frustrating because all of us like to get to the end, but...
And I'm thinking back to... So I think Stacey had suggested informal inferential reasoning and or sampling distributions as two potential foci. And then I think Jen sort of problematized that by suggesting that we should make sure that whichever one of those we select, we wouldn't be better off selecting some sort of component that goes into that. And then I think my question was, when we say all these things, are we talking about formal or informal concepts, and does that affect the number and type of constituent components of each thing? Which I think, in my mind, brings us back to, what do we really want to look at here? Any thoughts?
Ow. Brain hurt.
I think that... Well, okay, so I don't know that this is a question we can necessarily answer in this particular conference call. I think that if we're trying to think about, how do I want to phrase this? I think no matter what topic we're looking at, whether it's informal inferential reasoning or sampling distribution, or the building blocks of the sampling distribution, like the notion of distribution in general and variability and, you know, being able to coordinate, looking at shape, center, and spread of a distribution, as some of the readings have talked about. And then even the effect that different contexts might have on a student's ability to do that. I think that there are a lot of components, because I think by the time you get to informal inferential reasoning or even sampling distributions, that despite the fact that those are considered introductory statistics topics, I think that there's a lot of complexity involved in reasoning about those topics that isn't necessarily communicated in a typical intra-stat course. And there's a lot that students are having to try and put together if they're really understanding all of the elements in those courses. And so maybe I'm talking in circles here too, but I'm just thinking about, as we try to narrow in, have this area that I still think is pretty broad, although it's much more focused than, like, say, all of statistics. But I'm just thinking, like, how we sort of conceive as a group a particular aspect of, you know, informal inferential reasoning or whatnot, and to like really think about what we mean or what sort of context we're looking at that in, and I think that might require us being like, maybe we want to pick out a few of these articles that, like the sampling distribution article, for instance, or the informal inferential framework that the Zeffler article talked about, and maybe the Saldana and Thompson work that you were reading. I know that Lewis's first his earlier, like his 2003 article, has some of the same information in it. Because I haven't read the newest articles, but I read his dissertation work and his that I think it's like 2003 or 2004, something like that. I think it's an article in Educational Studies, but and I think those are pretty seminal pieces, and there's a lot of subtlety there that like as a group we might really need to sit down, read all together, and then try and spend some time writing out our thoughts on that in a as detailed way as possible so that we can share, so we can focus in. I don't know what you guys think about that. I'm not trying to, I feel like I've been talking too long, but.
Is this one of those articles that you think is really that important?
Well, I think that from some of the literature that I've seen so far, I would say that the Saldana Thompson piece, at least one of those pieces where he's talking about, like, is the sample unusual and, like, what constitutes that. And I think the sampling distribution article by Chance, Delmas, and Garfield, and I think the framework by Zeffler et al. Are pretty big, at least for the areas that we're considering researching. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, as a group, I think we all need to have a pretty clear idea of how the research community is conceiving of these things, what the research community in general thinks of as sort of the building blocks from moving from one step to the next, right, in terms of student development, and what we think about that, and if we think that seems logical or reasonable, and, you know, whether or not that's been tested or not, because, I mean, like the readings that I did, I mean, I think it could be really cool if we could, you know, have an empirical study to kind of test some of these ideas, because there hasn't really, at least from the, you know, even as 2008 for the developing students' statistical reasoning, there hasn't been work focused on, you know, there's been all these great ideas with how do we develop informal inferential reasoning and what are these tasks that we can give students that are going to help engage them in this process. And as of yet, there's no actual empirical studies that say, hey, this is an effective method. So,
yeah. Admittedly, that was the major flaw I had in the articles I read was, okay, they're trying, you know, where's the, did it work? Or, you know, the, yes, we actually tested something and here's the test we did and it worked sort of, or it didn't work, or, you know, we didn't have that. You know, I didn't have that in what I read.
You're not going to find that very often. I mean, the comparative sort of designed experiments in these areas are scarce. And that is an opportunity to provide a real contribution. But I guess I just would just caution you a little bit to not expect that as the norm.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because it is difficult, and you have comparative issues, and you know, you have confounding issues if you don't have the same teacher teaching the same sections, and to show that, I don't know, let's say active learning is better than the other could sabotage their other class, so it's not effective. And so, have you seen an article that I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I did write an article sort of about my thoughts on this whole quandary, because I got caught up in this on something that I was going to do. I could send a PDF version of that if you guys might find it interesting.
Yeah. So, definitely. All right.
I'll do that.
Well, and I'm wondering, so Jen, listening to your ideas, I was wondering if part of what you were thinking about was also trying to review the literature in a more focused way to see, let's say we pick the idea of sampling distributions. We would say, what do all of the researchers out there say are the constituent pieces or the constituent conceptions that go into being able to work effectively with sampling distributions? And perhaps how does that fit into informal or potentially formal inferential reasoning? And then some of our research activity might be to come up with some sort of documentation about whether or not those things do seem to be constituent components. So, for example, if we did a teaching experiment, the focus or the point might not be to see whether or not a particular lesson taught students something, but rather to describe how students progressed or how students' conceptions grew to whatever end and see if, you know, in trying to get them to develop a conception of sampling distributions, we saw these other things along the way that the research seemed to predict.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's exactly some of the things I was trying to...
And maybe if I could chime in here, because I'm going to have to sign off soon. Remember, you don't have to decide today what your topic is, but what you should decide today is just decide what you need to read next.
Yeah.
And so don't see, you know, and you can read those papers and decide, well, you know, this really isn't exciting all of us or what have you. You know, this process does take time, and you guys are doing a great job so far. I think you're doing an excellent job of staying on task. You're doing an excellent job of summarizing these points, and you seem to be working really well in your discussions. You're listening to each other and giving each of you an opportunity to speak. So I'm very impressed so far in that regard. And then just to clarify, you know, I don't want to discourage you from thinking about doing a comparative study. That, you know, that's certainly possible, and that's the scarcity speaks to, like I said, there's an opportunity for a real contribution.
Yeah, Don, I wanted to ask you about that because, I mean, I think that maybe for a lot of the reasons you mentioned, those studies aren't done very often.
I think it's talked about in the SMER report that Sterling talked about when we were all at USCOTS. That statistics for math education report. It's mentioned in there. It's talked about there. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was actually just thinking of the SMER report because I was thinking that it seems like, you know, some of the initial stages that document would kind of talk about if you're following the medical model might be like a teaching experiment or kind of seeing what was possible, and then like later stages would be, okay, well, now it seems like, you know, some researchers here and there have talked about these kind of tasks helping develop students in formal inferential reasoning, and now like maybe the next step is testing these out at a few different institutions. And because that's what I was thinking, like, in terms of our group, that we do have quite a few different institutions in that.
No, that's actually very true. And so you do have another rich opportunity there to go. You have different types of institutions as well as different instructors and so forth. One thing I like to think about is that in gathering evidence about something, one thing to consider in addition to the comparative experiment is what I call and other people call sort of like a vision of the possible. So let's say you're talking about inference, informal inference even, and you're sort of interested in what Aaron articulated, like, is this formal understanding of sampling distributions necessary for informal inference. I mean, what you could sort of do is look at an intervention of some kind that really nailed down sampling variability and then see, well, do these students have some of the, you know, the conceptual understanding of informal inference? And so you could just sort of see, if I do this, is it possible to achieve that? And so you're not saying that teaching this way is better than that way. You're just saying, look, this way led to some success in achieving this. That's also something that I think is very useful in the literature as well.
And
that's a good point.
And thinking, I guess, not completely positively, if we were to do something like that and we found that it didn't seem to, teaching in a particular way didn't seem to do anything, is that...
Well, that's always a good question. Is a negative result sort of publishable or useful? I think, of course, it would be useful. Referees and editors it would have to be on a case-by-case basis. I think a journal like Surge would probably be interested in something like that. I think that would be really interesting, especially in this field, which is young and old all at the same time, and results are in all a bunch of different literatures and stuff. But you know, preventing other people from trying the same thing, and then being able to write about, well, this didn't necessarily work like we thought, but then we would make changes A, B, C, and D. I think that would be a very useful article.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about next steps, is our next step to, assuming this is essentially a direction we'd like to head in for now, is our next step to try to focus a little bit to find a small body of research articles that sort of identify what all of these recommendations and constituent components are?
I think that seems like a good suggestion. And I know...
I'm gonna sign off now, but I think you're on the right track, so I'll be reading the minutes when they get posted. And then I think I sent Stacy my times for the next meeting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So keep talking. Sorry that none of your mentors are going to be on the call for the end, but I have faith in you guys and gals. All right, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Bye.
Bye. Just a thought that one textbook that I read, the 2008, the Garfield's Benzi book, I think that could be an interesting place for us to look. I mean, they have chapters on sampling, distribution, variability, and inference. And the goal of that book was to, like, connect research to practice. So it gives a quick summary of what research has been done in those areas, and then the tasks that have been used by researchers, and then how that would get put into practice. That might give us a place where we want to go if we're trying to think of how we might extend and or, ideas for designing some kind of teaching experiment, or I don't know what you guys think about that.
You're talking about the 2008 one and not the...
Yeah. But I also think the one you read, the sampling distribution article out of, too, has, that was 2004, I think, that has a lot of information, too, just in terms of, again, variability.
Yeah. Well, and I got the PDF files from Joan Garfield of both of those texts. So if we chose to read part of either of those, I could send that out to the group.
I'm pretty sure... The book that you're referring to, the new one, is the one that they gave away at the end of the talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a copy of that one.
Oh, okay.
So are we thinking of all reading the same thing, or trying to read different things and each contribute to some sort of summary, or how are we thinking of organizing this? And I guess did we also pick a Do we want to pick a particular topic, or do we want to still look sort of broadly?
Well, I think I like Jen's idea of us all reading the Zeffler article about the informal inferential reasoning, because it seems like that's a topic we're all really interested in, and it's a good, a defining article so that we can get all on the same page of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my suggestion for an article to read.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right.
And I also think what we might want to do, because we're, I mean, and I think this is probably fairly common, I think it's like, we might be sort of going in circles for a while, but that they should hopefully be like narrowing in on something. But like, that if we all read, two of the same pieces next time, and then maybe if something struck us in one of those pieces and we found, like, a reference for that, that we could pursue it. But I was just thinking if we sort of were on the same page about maybe some of the informal inferential reasoning or whatnot, then it might give us, like, a place to kind of all piece together stuff for our next conversation, and then we might want to separate out and read different things after that. You know, we might want to kind of go back and forth between those two models.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
And so when we're reading about the informal inferential reasoning, so do we have thoughts about exactly what it is we should be looking for? For example, are we trying to look for what, so if people have described informal inferential reasoning, are we sort of coming up with a list of the things that, the constituent components of IIR? Are we looking for sort of a consensus of what a broad definition of IIR is? Are we looking for examples where people tried to perform teaching experiments to develop IIR, or are we looking for something else?
Well, at the very least, I think we should at least come up with a definition that we agree on. If there isn't, if there isn't necessarily a complete consensus one, at least a definition that we all agree is to work off of.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, we need to be kind of putting into our own words what we see as how those terms are being defined in the literature, and then discuss them, and then sort of our interpretations of them, so we have a working definition to go from. And then I also think, though, that one of the things we might want to do as we're moving through those, and just in general, I mean, John brought up the idea of, like, okay, if we do some kind of teaching experiment or intervention, what's possible? So if we can really nail down, like he had mentioned his example, if we can really nail down sampling distribution with students, both informally and formally, and then we give them some kind of test on informal inferential reasoning tasks, you know, what would they do with that? So if I can do this with my class, would it be possible for them to move on to this? Or there was that the idea of doing some kind of comparative study. I think we should try to be keeping in the back of our mind what kind of study we might want to do, even. Just be kind of like floating those things around so that we can sort of narrow in on those ideas too.
And so I just tried to jot down or paraphrase what you were just saying. And so you can all tell me if this is sort of maybe a lens through which to work. So the question I have written down is, how do formal and informal conceptions of sampling distributions support the development of informal inferential reasoning? Does that sound similar to what you were saying, or was I not?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does.
Okay, so then as we're reading, this is sort of a kind of question we might keep in the back of our heads as, developing a definition of IIR with the idea that eventually we might want to see how sampling distributions support IIR?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, coming out of our conversations from today, but...
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have any other thoughts or suggestions for our big focus for as we're reading?
So do we have a couple of particular ideas of specific things we want to collectively read or collectively look at? So
yeah.
you were suggesting from the book that you had listed the summary of chapter 13 in your write-up, Jen. Are you suggesting in particular that chapter or something different?
That chapter or I think I'd probably first...
Or the Surge article.
Let me think here for a second. I think we should start with the Surge article.
Okay.
And then I also think, since we're talking about the sampling distribution stuff, that we should read the the sampling distribution from Chance, Delmas, and Garfield.
That's what I read last week, so I have a copy of that I can email out if people want it.
Yeah, that would be good.
And then, should we also try the Saldana article, or?
I thought it was pretty interesting, and it wasn't terribly long.
Which one? Because there's three of them.
Oh, I read one from 2007, the Saldana and Thompson Exploring Connections Between Sampling Distributions and Statistical Inference.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, do you wanna send that one out?
Yep, I will do that.
Okay. And I mean, I know that for some of us these are like rereads, but I feel like sometimes when I read stuff a second or even a third time, like there's parts that I pick out that I had not even thought about the first time. So
yeah, and that probably will help us focus a little more, because I don't know, ideas jump out at you the first reading, but if they jump out at you again the second reading, it can kind of show you what maybe we're more interested in.
Yeah. And I sometimes think there are intricacies that I hadn't even, like, been able to attend to because I was just, like, focused on the big picture of the article or something, you know?
Yeah, I think it'll be good now that we have more of an idea of why we're reading these articles.
So what we're trying to get out of them should help us refocus. Okay, so we have three articles for next time. Stacy's going to send out the Chance article, and Aaron, you're going to send out the Saldana Thompson article.
Yep.
Okay, cool. And everyone else has access to the CERD article.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just send out, I guess I'm the organizer for next time, is that right?
I believe so, yes. Which means
okay.
I become secretary next time, or recorder, whatever the job title is.
Right.
Okay. And I also have the notes, so I'll send, when I write up the notes, I'll just send out a reminder of everything we're planning on reading, and hopefully the focus that I have down. And if I miss anything, you guys can let me know.
And also this time, I don't know, Aaron, did you do the star 2 last time to record the conversation?
You know, I don't remember.
I
don't think I did.
Okay, because I didn't know if that would be useful or not, so I just pushed it, which was the loud voice at the beginning. So I think Jean said that they could post it on a website or something. So I'll email you guys and let you know. I don't know if we want to... want to read things while you're writing up the notes or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be helpful. Yeah, so if you have that information, let me know. And Stacey, did you need to have anything other than, I mean, we just use the same number and same access code. Do I need anything in particular to, like, start the conference call?
Yeah, email Jean.
Okay.
She'll give you a passcode. So once we set up the next time, email her with that time, and then she'll email you back with the thing to do.
Okay. Cool.
So then we should probably set up the next time, right?
Right. Were you able to get success from reading through all our schedules, Stacey?
Depends on what success is. I did get times where all of us are free, but they're far and few between. The times, there's Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern time, which I realize is lunchtime for you guys, but all of those seemed free for everyone. And then the only other times were Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday after 6 p.m. on Eastern time, and every other time seemed blocked out by at least one person. So,
the Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 3 p.m.? Oh, sorry, 12 Eastern time.
Right, which would be 9 a.m. our time.
Wednesday, Friday.
say lunchtime, you know, doesn't bother me.
Okay.
I'm fine then.
Is that good? Okay, good. That seems like the best option. And then Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, any preferences?
For us, we happen to have common hour on Wednesdays from 11 to 1 p.m. when there are no classes, and that's when faculty senate meetings are and department meetings and all of that. So my preference would be not Wednesday.
Okay.
Monday, Friday, you know, I'll leave that to you folks.
Okay. Anyone else?
Do we have a date in mind?
Let's see.
If we use the same idea that we have been, you know, ever in terms of the pattern of how often, we're probably looking at September 14th or the 21st.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the 20. Yeah, either one of those. But maybe let's try for
the 21st.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go. Okay.
Either one. Yeah. The 21st, unless we wanted. Because the 14th would be, let's see, 1, 2, 3 weeks. Yeah, so the 21st would be another 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That works.
Okay, so the 21st, Monday at 12 Eastern time.
Yep.
Okay.
And then that, from judging from our schedules, that time should be working for the fall. So that will help for our next scheduling.
Good.
Okay, cool. All right, so I will send out notes soon and figure out some way to maybe re-listen to the conversation if I need to. And then I'll send you all reminders for the next session.
Sounds good.
Great.
Well.
All right, folks.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of your summer if you still are on summer.
Yeah, you too. Talk to you guys later.
Yep.
Happy all in 4 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.